Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Dalet, Chapter 4. In today's Perek, the prophecy related to Shmuel in the previous two chapters is about to be realized. Pasuk Aleph is an introductory statement to the events of the Perek. Vayhi dvar Shmuel l'chol Yisrael, vayetze Yisrael likrat plishtim la'milchama, vayachanu al ha'even ha'ezer uflishtim, Chanu ba'afek. The word of Shmuel was available to all of Israel, and Israel went out to war against the Plishtim, camped at Even Ha'ezer, while the Plishtim camped at Afek. Pasuk Bet, verse 2, Vaya'archu Plishtim likrat Yisrael, Vatitosh ha'milchama, Vayinagef Yisrael ifnei Plishtim, Vayaku ba'ma'archa basadeh ke'arba'at alafim ish. The Plishtim planned their attack against Israel, who suffered a resounding defeat, abandoning the battle and losing approximately 4,000 troops. Ralbag reads Pasuk Aleph as a criticism of Israel. The word of Hashem was with all of Israel through Shmuel, and Israel went out to war against the Plishtim, highlighting that although Shmuel was available to them and his prophecy was a constant national resource, they went out to war independently, without consulting him. When the nation returned from the war following their devastating defeat, still they did not consult Shmuel. Rather, Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Vayavohu ha'am el ha'machaneh, vayomru ziknei Yisrael, lama nigafanu Hashem hayom lifnei plishtim. The nation returned to the camp, and the elders conducted their own council, asking one another, why did Hashem cause us to be routed by the plishtim? They decided to take the Aron HaBrit, the Ark of the Covenant, which contained the Luchot, the Ten Commandments, from Shiloh, out to war with them as a sort of mascot, whose presence would surely save them from the enemy. Now, Hashem had told Shmuel that Eli and his household were to be punished. Why were the people concerned that they too would be punished? Musar HaNeviim cites the Midrash Eliyahu Rabbah, which teaches that when the elders asked that question, Hashem responded, when the sons of Eli were sinning in the Mishkan, you did nothing to stop them. Now that you are going out to war, I will do nothing to stop your enemies. When the people saw the sins of Eli's sons, they complained about them to one another, but did nothing to effect change. The Midrash teaches that there is no such thing as an innocent bystander. If we see wrongdoing and it is within our capacity to protest, we are obligated to do so. The decision to remove the Aron from its proper place and take it out to war without consulting with Shmuel would have catastrophic consequences. Their miscalculation is highlighted in Pasuk Dalid. Vayishlach ha'am shilo, vayis'u misham et Aron brit Hashem tzva'ot yoshev ha'kruvim. The people sent to Shiloh and carried forth from there the Ark of the Covenants of God of the Multitudes, seated between the Kruvim. All of this description serves to heighten the sense that the Aron is meant to be in its assigned place, befitting its dignity. Moreover, the Pasuk continues, Visham shnei bnei Eli im Aron brita Elokim, Chofni uFinchas. Who was leading this endeavor? There with the Aron were the sons of Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, whose downfall had been foretold by two prophets. And when the Aron arrived on the battlefield, the people blew the trumpets, sounding the Truah, causing a great uproar. They demonstrated overconfidence, as well as complete failure to associate the punishment with the sin that had caused it. Sounding the trumpets at a time of war is meant to arouse the hearts of the people to Teshuvah, to draw them closer to Hashem, as described by the Rambam. Trumpeting the Truah without Teshuvah totally deprives the ritual of its meaning. When the Plishtim heard the sounds of the trumpets, they realized that the Israelites had brought their God to the encampment. The Plishtim behaved in accordance with their conception of God, which is as a force of nature that can be overcome. They did believe that the Jewish God was fearsome. They expressed deep concern. Oy lanu, ki lo hayta kazot etmol shilshom. Woe unto us! It wasn't like this yesterday and the day before. Woe unto us! Who will save us from this powerful deity who brought plagues upon the Egyptians and in the desert? But they recover pretty quickly and call out to one another, התחזקו, והיו לאנשים פלישתים. פן תעבדו לעברים כאשר עבדו לכם, והייתם לאנשים ונלחמתם. Be men, פלישתים. Lest we become subject to the Hebrews, as they have served you, be men and fight. In their conception of the world, human beings can overcome the gods, and this is a measure of the dignity of man. The Plishtim fought, and once again overwhelmed the Israelites, who fled each to his own tent. The defeat was catastrophic. 30,000 troops were killed in this battle, and the Aron was captured by the Plishtim. The two sons of Eli, Hophni and Pinchas, were killed in the battle. Pasuk Yud Bet, verse 12. Vayaratz ish Binyamin meha ma'aracha, vayavo shilo bayom hahu, umadav kruim va'adama al rosho. A man of Shevet Binyamin, the tribe of Binyamin, ran from the battlegrounds and arrived in Shiloh the very same day, a feat of extraordinary strength, and his uniform was torn and earth upon his head. While the text does not identify the man, the Midrash teaches that this was none other than Shaul, who would someday be king. Shaul acted instinctively out of burning love for Hashem and his Torah. He ran first to the camp of the Plishtim. Note the difference between Vayanas and Vayaratz. While Bnei Yisrael were Nasim, running away from, Vayaratz Ish Binyamin, the man of Binyamin, ran towards his object. Shaul entered the camp of the Plishtim, determined to save at least the Luchot, which were enshrined within the Aron. When he arrived at the camp, he saw that the Plishtim were raucously celebrating their victory, and the Luchot had been placed in the hands of a great idol. Miraculously, Shaul was able to grab the Luchot and run, and miraculously propelled by the spiritual force of the Luchot, he kept running until he reached Shiloh. And it is for this deed of bravery, motivated by pure spiritual determination, that Shaul was later rewarded with kingship, according to the Midrash. Mishbitzot Zahav takes further note of the description of Shaul, who arrived im madav kruim va'adama al rosho, with his uniform torn and earth upon his head. He cites Rav Moshe David Vali, who taught that in the merit of these signs of mourning over the Aron, Shaul merited to wear royal garments and a crown upon his head. Mishbitzot Zahav adds to this that this is the first, but not the last time that we see significant symbolism in the clothing of Shaul. Here we see Shaul's merit in earning royal status, while later we will see torn clothing as a symbol of the end of his royal tenure. When the runner arrived in Shiloh, with his torn uniform and dirt on his head, Eli was sitting on his chair facing the road, waiting expectantly, for he was anxious about the fate of the Aron, and the man approached the city. Mitzudat David explains that he circumvented Eli and entered the city from a different direction to tell the news in the city, and there was a great outcry in the city. Eli heard the cries and asked, "Me kol ha-hamon hazeh? What is this great noise?" And the man then rushed to tell Eli, and Eli was 98 years old at that time, and his eyes failed to see. The man said to Eli, "I have come from the battlefield, from which I escaped today." Eli questioned him, "What has happened, my son?" As we saw him do with Shmuel, Eli realizes that the news is not good, and the messenger is hesitant to tell him the whole story. The fact that he used the word nasti, I escaped, would certainly have caught Eli's attention. Therefore, he calls the messenger Bini, my son, as a sign of reassurance that he will not blame him for the news he's about to impart. Vaya'an hamivaser, the man is now called a herald, a term generally associated with one who brings good news. Malbim explains that when he saw how calmly Eli responded to him, the runner felt that he could safely impart the remainder of the news, which was the fulfillment of Shmuel's prophecy. So he began, ordering his words carefully, min hakal el hakaved, from the least bad to the most intense, gently progressing from bad to worse. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vaya'an hamvaser vayomer, Nas Yisrael lifnei plishtim, v'gam magefa gdola hayta ba'am, v'gam shnei banecha metu, Hophni u'Pinchas, v'aron ha'elokim Nilkacha. The herald responded, Yisrael has fled from the Plishtim, who struck a mighty blow against the nation. Moreover, your two sons, Chofni and Pinchas, have been slain, and the ark of the Lord was taken captive. Mishbetzot Zahav notes the unusual grammar of the last word, Nilkacha, which is written in the feminine form, although it is describing that which occurred to the Aron, a masculine noun. He explains that this is an allusion to the destruction of Shiloh itself as the site of the Mishkan. Shiloh was destroyed, and the Mishkan, which as the handiwork of Moshe Rabbeinu was indestructible, was taken apart and reassembled in Nov, where it remained without the Aron until that city was destroyed. At this point, due to the lack of centrality of the Mishkan and the fact that it was bereft of the Aron, it became permissible to offer sacrifices on bamot, specially built platforms, until the Beit HaMikdash would be built in Yerushalayim. But back to our grammatical irregularity, the hey of the word nilkacha, turning it from the masculine to the feminine, corresponds to the last letter of Hashem's name, which in turn corresponds to the midah, the divine aspect of malchut, Hashem's kingship as it is felt in this world. Hashem's presence was now uprooted from its proper place, as it were. Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18, Vayhi kehazkiro et Aron ha'elokim, vayipol me'al hakisei achoranit be'ad yad hashar, vatishaver mafrakto vayamot, ki zaken ha'ish, v'chaved, v'hu shafat et Yisrael 40 shana. At the mention of the Aron having been taken, Eli fell backward off his chair by the gatepost. His neck was broken and he died, for he was old and heavy. Eli had judged Israel for 40 years. Eli is honored in his last moment, remembered not as the father of Chofni and Pinchas, but in the final event as the revered leader of the Jewish people. He absorbed the news of the war and the death of his sons, but could not withstand the shock of the indignity to which the Aron, the glory of the Mishkan, had been subjected. At that time, Eli's daughter-in-law, the wife of Pinchas, was about to give birth. When she heard the news about the deaths of her father-in-law and husband, her birth pangs overwhelmed her, and she bent over in pain. And as she lay dying in childbirth, her maids tried to soothe her, saying, "Look, you have given birth to a son." But she neither answered nor attended to them. With her last breath, she called the child, "I kavod," disgrace, without honor, for honor has been exiled from Israel with the capture of the Aron HaElokim. Her response is recorded as a symbol of the despair felt by the nation at the death of their veteran spiritual leader and the captivity of the Aron, which represented the visible symbol of attachment between Hashem, the people, and his Torah. Thank you for learning together Le'ilui Nishmot Imotenu HaYikarot, Esther Oppenheimer, Alea Shalom, and Sarah Schenker, Alea Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.